You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction, written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. Our current serial is The Bromancers, which is the third Belladonna University story. So I'm recording now after returning from Continuum. I did have a great time, as predicted. I got to spend lots of time with friends. It was a well-thought-out convention, great gender parity on the panels. I was especially delighted with the guests of honour, Lecane and Seanan Maguire. Both so wonderful, so smart and inspiring. I wish I could go back and see even more of their programming than I did. If I have one regret from the convention, it is that. But I really loved what I did get to see. Going to give another shout out for Mother of Invention. This is the feminist robot and artificial intelligence anthology I'm currently kickstarting with my co-editor, Rivka Raphael, and 12th Planet Press. As I record, we're past the $12,000 mark. I hope we're a lot further than that by the time this is broadcast. We're still going strong, but we need more pledges, more people who like the sound of this book and are willing to pre-order a copy. Or even go for one of the higher, fancier reward tiers. But honestly, look, just signing up for the ebook is fantastic. We really appreciate all the backers we've had so far. Link to the pages in the show notes. If Mother of Invention sounds like a book you want to support, come along and join the party. Now, back to Mandrake Sands. The Bromancers, Episode 5. Whatever happened to Miss Juniper Creswell, gentlewoman and cellist? Dear Diary, I don't do this. I'm not like this. Last night was an anomaly. That's a lie. A lot of what happened last night was out of character, but I can't say it was an anomaly. I followed Holly Hallow, and shenanigans ensued. That pretty much sums up the pattern of everything I've done since she and her enchanted flyers entered my life. Holly Hallow does something crazy, and I follow her. There are times when I question my place in an indie rock band. I'm a classically trained musician. 12 of my closest relatives, including both parents, 4 aunts and uncles, my grandfather, several cousins, each play for one of the country's 3 premier orchestras: the Sydney Siren Chamber Orchestra, the Floating Orchestra in Melbourne, or the Tasmanian Symphony Orchestra. My parents were expecting me to major in real music, with a possible minor in unreal music, as part of an ongoing path that has been mapped out for me since I was 6 years old. Me plus professional cello playing destiny equals true happiness. But when I started at Belladonna U, staring at that whole curriculum of formalised music study, I just couldn't do it. I was done. Burned out. I fled to unreal humanities. My parents had the expected collective meltdown. Even when I promised them I was majoring in political science, I wasn't completely immersing myself in an indulgence of 19th century literature, which is my one true love. They couldn't understand how I might give up music. Truthfully, I only gave it up for about a month. 4 quiet weeks before I followed a pretty girl who was stapling flyers to bulletin boards across campus. The flyers sang at you when you got near them, and there was something about the lyrics so silly and geeky and fun. It was so long since music had been fun for me. My parents tried not to look smug and say, "We told you so," when I went home for the weekend and collected Irene, my cello. Needless to say, they were not delighted to discover that I wanted Irene with me to audition for an odd little geek rock band, instead of fulfilling the orchestral destiny they had planned for me. That was more than 2 years ago, and I've learned to trust myself. Following Holly Hallow into adventure and shenanigans is worth it. Every time. It's not just because she's so pretty it makes my heart hurt. It's not just because she's fierce in a way that women simply aren't in my family. It's mostly because the adventures she leads me on are more than I would ever find for myself. How Having said that, the first night that we set up camp for Winterfest at Mandrake Sands, following her was my first mistake. Losing her was my second. "Just one drink," I heard her promising Hebe, who wasn't impressed we were decamping the camp so early. "I'll take Juniper with me." Holly was using her most innocent voice. She was also clearly using me. Hebe gave her twin a dirty look, not fooled at all. "Juniper's present does not guarantee your good behaviour. You know you're not actually my mother, right?" I cleared my throat. "Holly, I'm thirsty." Hebe gave me an impatient look and washed her hands of both of us. "Fine, try not to pick fights with any band you want to open for someday." "That leaves so many options," Holly grinned. "No, it does not," Hebe said sternly. "Witches don't like to rough it. Sure, we were living in tents for a few days, but that didn't mean we couldn't do it in style." The drinking tents at Winterfest were works of art. They looked like canvas on the outside, but once you stepped inside, you found yourself in a world of wonder and aesthetic glory. Holly and I drank ouzo in an Athenian amphitheatre, champagne in a Parisian cabaret / karaoke bar, and something that I'm pretty sure was absinthe in a grimy night den that looked from the outside like a dryer bone propped up on three sticks, but had room inside for three chandeliers and several ornate fainting couches. Holly likes to get the lay of the land the first night at any music festival. She knows four times as many people as I do, and she never lets a conversation last for longer than 5 minutes. But she wants to be the first person to develop opinions on which hangouts are best and which are best avoided. With music festivals, everything's a performance. Wherever you go, someone is singing or playing or unofficially auditioning for someone else's band. Holly was drawing more of a crowd than usual, and by the time the eighth person casually dropped into conversation that they had keyboarding experience, I finally twigged what was going on. "Are we looking for a new band member?" I hissed in her ear. "No," she said, laughing it off. "Of course not. Why does everyone think we are?" Holly looked shifty. I might have sent out some feelers. "And you didn't think to talk it over with Sage and I first?" Holly shrugged, guiltless as ever. "We all know the band's been missing something since Nora ditched us. Sage and I have talked about it a few times. He thinks we need a new sound, different songs, moving forward with the music. I think we need another person, and if I find the right one, he'll come around soon enough." "Oh." It stung. Of course Holly and Sage had talked about what the band needed, or argued about it, whatever. They were like cats in a sack, those two, always scratching at each other. Still, they were close in a way neither of them had ever been with me. Fake Geek Girl was theirs first, before they found Nora, well before I joined. Sometimes I wondered if they'd even notice if Irene and I disappeared from the band. Would they miss me the way we miss Nora? How long would it take before they replaced me with some new sound? We were between our fourth and fifth drinking tents when Holly heard the voice. "That's it," she said, ditching her cider bottle in a nearby recycling zone and hurrying away from the fairy lights of the designated paths. "What's what?" "The sound, Junie, the thing we've been missing, that's it. That's her." She followed the voice. And of course I followed her. It's what I do. Let me condense our adventures somewhat. In search of the perfect voice, who would apparently serve as some sort of musical band-aid to repair the undefinable missing something in our band, we may or may not have done the following. 1. Tripped over three stoned Bromancers fans arguing about whether or not the new episode was going to be a game-changer. 2. Strayed into the camping ground of the metal-headed wombats, territory we usually stay clear of because Sage hooked up with three of the four band members three festivals ago. Yes, all on the same weekend. And the fallout almost destroyed their band. 3. Discovered there was a secret knitting community on site, which does not take kindly to random visitors. Knitters are territorial. 4. Accidentally set off several privacy proximity charms, which led to the unexpected revelation that two actually quite famous members of different bands, who were both married to actually quite famous other people, were sharing a tent while naked, along with a third actually quite famous solo act. Oops. Sorry. 5. Hid in a bush to eavesdrop on a private beach party, including the croony, husky voice of a siren with laugh lines and tie-dyed jeans, who happened to be my lit professor. So that was a thing. Prof Nettle normally wore librarian chic tweed, her hair in a messy bun, and the most sensible shoes known to which kind. Tonight, she was barefoot, a guitar resting on her knees, and a crowd of adoring fans circled around her as she sang a cheesy old Betty Hubble cover with folksy sass and surprising depth. "That's her," Holly breathed. "That's the voice I heard earlier. She's a milf and a half." I elbowed her hard. "Hol, we have to go. I couldn't be here, couldn't be involved with this." Professor Nettle looked all soft around the edges here on the sands, but she was notoriously sharp-edged and scathing in the classroom. I'd taken several of her classes without her ever paying the slightest bit of attention to me, and that was exactly how I liked it. "I want to talk to her. She's gorgeous. And that voice! Holly," I said, "you can't have her." Telling Holly hello, she can't have something, is like telling a cakeaholic they should save the last slice for tomorrow. "Come on," she said urgently, and scrambled through the bush, in search of the professor with the killer voice. I stepped away, pulling back from her. It's not like I expected her to follow me. That's not our pattern. But I waited 10 minutes, and Holly still hadn't returned. That was when the evening started to go wrong. Because I didn't remember the way back to the safe lighted path zone, which left me wandering around in the dark. I found one thread of fairy lights, only to realise they were will-o'-the-wisps and not genuine helpful fairies, which meant I was back on a different stretch of the beach and nowhere near the camping equivalent of civilization. I hate that I do this, that I let Holly drag me around until I'm no longer convenient, every single time. I hate that when she's paying attention to me, I'd rather be with her than anywhere else. Finally, I found a sign saying, "Lost Witches, this way to the party." 3 E's in party. With a large arrow pointing back over the dunes, I scrambled up and over, finding myself on a path with genuine fairy lights, then zeroed in on a charmed map of the full campsite with a sigh of relief. If I went via the Hobbit pub and the history tent, it wouldn't take me long at all. And if Holly's antics were anything to go by, I'd have the tent to myself tonight. "Hey," said a cheerful voice, "are you Juniper Creswell? I love Fake Geek Girl, like you're my favourite band of all time." I never get recognised. Not unless I have Irene with me, and sometimes not even then. I like it that way. The group is a little bit famous in some circles. I don't mind that. It's like an orchestra. We're all part of something bigger than the sum of its parts. I wear makeup on the YouTube vids so I look different to the real life version of me. It's always Sage or Holly on the publicity materials, or a distant shot of the three of us. Because I hate it when people pay attention to me. So awkward. Still, politeness costs nothing. "Thanks," I said, turned and smiled towards the owner of the voice. She was cute, in a bright homemade Save Cinevate shirt, with bright teal curls under a knitted beanie. "Have you seen us at Medea's Cauldron?" "Only on YouTube," said the adorable fangirl. "I'm so excited for your set here, though. Day 2, right?" "Day 2," I confirmed. "Stage 4 after lunch." "I'll be there," said the cutie. "Holly Hello is so hot. I don't know how you can stand to be near her all the time." "Huh. Tell me about it." "Can I hug you?" she asked, already lurching in my direction. No. What I said was, I'm sure. The fangirl flung her arms around me, surrounding me with the thick scent of cloves and lavender and a thick tang of frankincense. A warning siren went off in my head because I knew those ingredients. That was basic spellcraft. And something sharp stung the back of my neck before I could yank myself away. Sorry, said the fangirl as a face went misty in front of me and then disappeared into the blackness. But really, I wouldn't have done this if it wasn't like mega important. Life or death. End of the world. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. Don't forget to check out the link to the Mother of Invention Kickstarter this month, June 2017 only. If you're listening to this after June 2017, you missed it! See you next week. Bye.